You're listening to the Daily Mishnah Podcast with Benedict.
So as we start the second chapter of Ketubot, we're going to circle around the question of the credibility of witnesses with which we close the first chapter. And incidentally, we're going to circle around much more loosely around questions of virginity and the size of the ketubah, the 200 zuz, which is the ketubah of the virgin, and the 100 zuz, or the maneh, that's the ketubah of a widow, with which we began the first chapter. So if you like, we're going to bring together the subject matters of the beginning and the end of the first chapter as we go into the second chapter. And we're going to begin with a classic situation, which must relate, by the way, to a woman who's lost her ketubah, or perhaps who got married in a region where they didn't write down the ketubah, but just took on themselves the obligations ordained by the sages. I mean, there are certain standard obligations in the ketubah, like the 100 and the 200 zuz. Maybe they just took these on without writing them down. But at any rate, this Mishnah is clearly speaking of a situation where there's no written ketubah, because there's a dispute as to what was contained therein. Ha'isha shenit alma o shenit garsha. So there's a woman who was widowed or divorced, so she needs her ketubah. She's going to claim the money on her ketubah. He omeret betula niseti. She says, I was a virgin when I got married. I'm sorry, I've mistranslated this. It's not when you married me. I was a virgin when I got married. The Huomer, and he says, by the way, he's clearly alive. So he, in this case, is not, in this case, we're talking about a divorce. But if we were talking about a widowhood, then the heirs would say. So he says, but okay, if he were no longer alive, his heirs would say, Lo, chi'ela almana nesatich. No, you were a widow when I married you. I.e., the ketubah that you owe, that is owed to you, is only 100 zuz, a maneh, not the 200 zuz that would have been owed if you were a virgin. And we've seen in the sequence of Mishnayot at the end of chapter 2 that Rabbi Yehoshua does not believe the woman's claim, but Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer do believe it. Having said that, those are situations where the woman knows something and the man doesn't. And in this situation, they seem to have access to equal information, at least if he's still alive, they do. And so the Mishnah is not going to rule that we just believe the woman, as in the disputes between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua, but the Mishnah rules, Im yesh edim sheyatzat behemuna verosha peruak tubatam atayim. If there are witnesses that she went out with a hinuma, and with her head uncovered, her ketubah is 200. I.e., if there are witnesses that her marriage was celebrated in the way that kind of they celebrated the marriage of a virgin, her ketubah is 200. But so, in other words, she needs to find witnesses to back up her claim. If we don't have the written ketubah, I mean, we can see now why the Maimonides says you shouldn't be with your wife even for an hour without a ketubah. It causes all kinds of problems. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Barokhi is going to bring another kind of proof. Clearly, this is another bridal custom. Rabbi Yochanan ben Barokhi says, Af, chiluk kaliot ra'aya. Even the distribution of roasted ears of corn is proof. So clearly, that they used to. This must have been part of the wedding ceremony at that point. Maybe it was like confetti. Maybe they used to throw them. I'm not sure. Now, we might ask, or you might ask, what is this hinuma thing that she went out with? And the Gemara in Ketubot asks, my hinuma, what's a hinuma? Anyway, Surchav bar Papam, Mishmei Dezera, Amar, Rabbi Surchav bar Papa, in the name of Zera, says, it's a tanura de asa, it's a canopy of myrtle. So maybe the bride went out under this canopy of myrtle leaves, if she's a virgin. That was the custom. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Krita de Manam, Krita de Manam Nama. Rabbi Yochanan says it's a veil under which the bride dozes. Dozing in Hebrew is nimnum. So now we can see, by the way, the root of hinuma. Dozing is nim, is lenam nem, and in Aramaic it's de menam nema. She used to doze. I don't know why the bride is dozing at a wedding feast. Maybe there's a long, boring wedding feast, so they provide this kind of veil and she can have a little nap underneath it if she's bored by the dancing. So that's the hinuma. In essence, to come back to the Mishnah, im yesh edim, if there are witnesses. That's the key word in this Mishnah. We'll now see two more Mishnayot that replicate the same wording. Just, this is halachic poetry. Modei Rabbi Yehoshua. Remember, Rabbi Yehoshua was the person that doesn't believe the wife, doesn't believe the woman who said she was raped, but he does apparently believe a man who brings a similar kind of verbal claim about a field. Modei Rabbi Yehoshua ba'omer lechavero. Rabbi Yehoshua agrees that if someone says to his fellow, Sadeze, this must be this field. By the way, this must be a field that I'm occupying. There'd be no reason otherwise. Sadeze shel avicha haya ulekati hamimenu. This field used to belong to your father, and I bought it from him. And he's believed, because we have a principle that essentially the mouth that forbids is the mouth that can free up. The mouth that takes on an obligation is the one that can free from the obligation. So there's no reason for him to say this field belonged to your father. He might have said, look, it's always been mine. But if he admits, if we believe him when he says it used to belong to your father, then we believe him when he say I bought it. And this is essentially the reasoning of the Mishnah. Ne'eman, we believe him. She'apeshe asar hu'apeshe hitir. He's believed, for the mouth that forbade is the mouth that permitted. It's an important principle in the Mishnah. Apeshe asar hu'apeshe hitir. The mouth that forbade is the mouth that permitted. And then we're going to go back to our leitmotif, im yesh edim, if there are witnesses. Im yesh edim shehila aviv hu omer lekachti hamimenu eino ne'eman. But if there are witnesses that it belonged to his father, so the statement that it belonged to his father isn't coming from the guy who says, I bought it. If there are witnesses, we don't believe him. We don't believe him if he just shows up and says, oh yeah, I bought it, unless there's further evidence. Similarly, ha'edim she'amru k'tav yadeinu hu zeh aval anusim hayinu k'tanim hayinu p'slei adut hayinu hare elu na'amanim. So there are witnesses who show up and they say, look, I admit this is my handwriting. So this is witnesses whose handwriting appears to be on a document. And they're asked, well, is this really your handwriting? So the witnesses say, yeah, this was our handwriting. K'tav yadeinu huzeh. But we were forced, or we were minors, or we were inadmissible as witnesses. In other words, fine, it was my handwriting on the document, but it is not a legal document. Ne'emanim, they're believed. It's the same principle. Given they could have just said, it's not my handwriting. Given they admit it's their handwriting, which, if you like, ties them to the document, they are also believed when they say, oh yeah, but the circumstances don't make this valid. And then we have our refrain, im yesh edim, if there were witnesses. If there are witnesses that it's their handwriting. So in other words, we don't rely on their statement that it's their handwriting. There are witnesses. Or maybe we've got other evidence of their handwriting from another place. They're not believed. In other words, the principle is that the mouth that forbids is the mouth that can permit. But in other circumstances, we don't believe a single witness.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Daily Mishnah Podcast with Benedict.